Next, The Lawyer You Know with Clearwater attorney Peter Tragos.
Welcome back to another episode of The Lawyer You Know. And today we've got Nick Sanders, our summer intern, on from Stetson Law School. And we are going to go through and talk about what's different about law school, what's difficult about law school, and then we're going to talk a little bit about the interview process and what went into Nick's interview, what I looked at and liked, what he was looking for and liked, and obviously made it a good pairing for this summer internship program, and hopefully answer a lot of the questions you guys may have about law school, law students, and getting a job while in law school.
Hi, I'm Peter Tragos, host of the Lawyer You Know podcast and YouTube channel. The saying goes, everyone hates lawyers until you need one. Well, I'm here when you need one to answer your questions and give you insight that you didn't know you needed. Along with my partners, Pete Sardis, the professor, who has a finance and business background, and George Tragos, my dad and the consigliere, a criminal defense giant, we can answer any questions you have.
We've got one of our law clerks here, Nick Sanders, who is at the top of his class. I always like saying that. It's good to brag about it while you're there because you never know how long you're going to be there. At Stetson Law School, he's been working with our firm as a summer intern. And so we're going to talk about a number of different law school topics today. Everybody's got different questions and different thoughts on law school. What's hard? What's easy? What's weird? What's different about it than regular school? So today we're going to dive into some of those topics. The first one being, let's talk about one of the most difficult parts of law school, which is exams, grades, how all that works. Give me what you got. What was your first exposure to exams? What did you think about it? How hard was it to adapt to? Tell me about it.
So this was something that I didn't even really think about or realize until I was in law school, just how different it was from undergrad. Because they don't really make it obvious. You don't really know until you're there that the grading system is very, very different from undergrad. Everything is on a curve. And what that means, I guess, let me dive into Stetson specifically.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure entirely how other schools do it. I assume it's very similar. So Stetson grades on a 4.0 scale, meaning the highest grade you can get is a 4.0. And it goes down at intervals of 0.25, so you can get a 3.75, 3.5, all the way down to zero. Stetson has a required average of a 3.0, so the professors need the class average to be hovering right around a 3.0. That means half the class is going to get a 3.0 or below, and the other half is going to get a 3.0 or above.
That's what they call grading on a curve.
Yep.
That's how the curve works.
Yep. So you can get pretty much everything right on an exam. You can understand the law. You could have written it perfectly. If everyone else in the class wrote it a little bit better than you, you're still at the bottom of the class. You're still going to be looking at a 2.5 or worse because they need to keep that average.
So a lot of the thing in law school, when you talk about the LSAT, when you talk about the bar, when you talk about a lot of law school classes, it's not always finding the right answer. It's finding the best answer, right? Because a lot of times there can be more than one correct answer, but which one is the most correct answer? That's what you have to determine. And that's one of the differentiators a lot of times, especially on the LSAT, where when you prep for the LSAT, and I guess we could talk about this a little bit too, since it's probably fresher in your mind than mine, but there was a lot of questions that had multiple correct answers. You had to be like, well, which one of these is the best? So that's an interesting experience, just kind of how you go through that. So when you talk about grading on a scale, and you talk about the 4-point scale, so before we get to the exams specifically, just sticking in the grading realm for now, Florida State, where I went, did it on a 100-point scale. So it's easy for everybody, right? And a lot of differentiators, and it was a lot easier for us to see, you know, who was first in the class, who was second. How do you feel about, I've never gone to a school that did a 4-point scale, have you? Where they actually grade tests like that?
Not before, now.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about college and people are like, I have a 4.0 GPA, not the same thing. Right. Like when you took a test in college, you still got a 98, right? There's no 98 on Stetson test scores. You get a 3.75 or whatever it may be, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So how do you feel about that? What was that? Do you like it? Do you not like it? How do you feel about it as a student?
It feels weird. So I don't mind it. It's okay. But I feel like there aren't enough intervals. So like the difference between a 3.25 and a 3.5 is huge in like the quality of a test to get one of those scores. So it feels weird to me that they're limiting themselves to such a small number of grades that you could potentially get.
Yeah, that's my biggest beef with it is if I was a student, I would hate it. Because especially in something that's as competitive as law school, you're trying to be the top of your class, right?
Right.
So, and Nick did awesome this year, right? We just finished this first semester, just finished exams for second semester. So he did awesome. He's near the top of his class, like top five of his class. And that's really hard to do. It's even harder to do when if you get a 3.25 on one test, now you've got to crush all your other tests. Where at Florida State, my first semester was my best semester. That's why I said, you never know how long it's going to last. Enjoy it. Ride the wave while you can. So I was in the top, I think I was 11th in my class at Florida State after my first semester. And I got 186 was my worst grade. And then it was like 97, 96, 94. So it's like, that's a huge, you know, disparity. But again, it's not the same as a 3.25 is now plummeting you to where you need all these high scores. Because an 86 can be averaged out with a 94 and then it's a 90. You know, it's easy to figure out and compute in your head. And there's so many different, like if I was just a little bit better than another student and I got a 94, that student got a 93, fine. But if you're just a little bit better, at some point, there's got to be a drop to the curve where you go from a 3.75 to a 3.0.
Right.
Where do you fall on that? That's the hard part for me as I would think about it as a student.
Yeah.
What do you guys talk about it as students now? How's everybody talk about it? Can you tell when you look at did you look at your exams after you took them, like your essays?
I looked at a couple of them.
And can you see where you got points and stuff? Is that how they graded them? Because that's how I could see with mine. They issue spot. It's what it's calling, right? It's what it's called in law school. So they give you a paragraph question and you have to type out all the law and all the issues and what you would do and how the law applies to it. Like we read this case that says that this is what happens in this factual scenario. And they just give you points for each little thing you pick out. So could you tell a big difference between the points they marked down on yours versus somebody that got a little bit lower score than you?
Not really. No, you couldn't. And I think the biggest difference with this grading scale here that I've noticed is in multiple choice exams. You know, going from a 3.75 to a 3.5 is just one multiple choice question.
And that's miserable.
Yeah.
That's absolutely miserable on a student, in my opinion. That's the worst thing.
Yeah. Whereas I guess your grading scale, it would have been a little bit more forgiving.
Right.
Wouldn't have been a huge deal. Here, it could be devastating to like overall GPA.
Yeah. Like we're talking about potentially separating students for one missed multiple choice, 25 spots in the rankings.
Yeah.
For mine, one multiple choice is one spot. Like you're literally, I did a little bit better, so I'm just one spot ahead of you now, and we go to the next test. And how much did I beat you by on the next test? So that to me is why it's kind of hard to determine it and kind of work through it as a student. And you have to learn it because a lot of law schools do that. Some law schools, I think, are even more the same. Like they don't even do a grade point scale. It's like pass, fail, or I'm trying to remember. I want to say it was my friend that went to Harvard Law, but I don't want to say that because everybody's probably going to know how Harvard Law grades and I don't. But I want to say he said you were either top of the class, middle of the class, or bottom of the class. And that's all they told you. Yeah, that's it. Like you go to law school, you didn't get grades on your exams. You were either top of the class, middle of the class, or bottom of the class. So each law school is different, but you have to figure out how they grade. So let's talk a little bit about exams. How many exams have you taken so far?
I've taken, I guess, 6 exams, 2 writing assignments, because I've done 8 classes so far.
Okay, and how many of your exams were multiple choice versus essay?
I've had, I want to say 3 exams that had multiple choice sections, but none of them were entirely multiple choice. There was always at least an essay component.
Yeah. Okay. And that's a big thing in law school. Most tests have essays on them. Okay. So multiple choice, we already talked about. Sometimes they're difficult because there are multiple right answers and you have to pick the best answer. So that's a difficult part about multiple choice in law school. But the big thing that I think is difficult is essays. What did you think when you first saw an essay question on the exam? Like, was it different than other essay questions you've had? How did it kind of compare to what you did in undergrad?
Very different, because it feels like as you're writing it out, and the way most of my essays were graded is you can't lose points, you can only gain points.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I love that. I don't know. Yeah. How do you feel? Some people hated it.
I did well on it. So the first, I did an ungraded midterm in the fall. That was the first experience I had with one of those questions. And as I was writing it out, it felt like word vomit.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
that's exactly what it is.
Had no idea how to organize my thoughts, had no idea how to kind of format the paper. It's literally just you're throwing everything you know out there, which is a little stressful because there can be some tiny hidden issues that you're missing. But overall, they're kind of fun.
So and I think they're fun, too. And it is throwing everything up against the wall and hoping something sticks. But if you're studying everything and you have all this stuff in your head, you want to get it all out. And those are the perfect opportunities to do it because it's just like, what do you know about this issue or what do you know about this case? And you just get to say everything and show how much you learned versus somebody who maybe didn't study as much. But what you don't do, so anybody that's thinking about going to law school, what you don't do is read it, make an outline and analyze exactly how the best way to answer this is, and then write like a one-page summary of this is how I would answer this question, which is what you would do. Like if I want you to give me a memo, that's what I want you to do.
Right.
Like if I'm asking, hey, Nick, figure out what this issue is for permissive use of a vehicle, and you give me 30 pages on it, that's every possible issue that could happen with a permissive use, I'm going to be like, I'm not even going to read this.
Right.
So you've got to learn how to do that in law school, but for the exams, they just want all the information that you've It's basically a memorization test. I mean, that's really right. What it came down to. So did you have any that were timed?
All of them were timed.
Okay, all of them were timed. Mm-hmm. So most of ours were timed. We had a couple that were open book. Have you done any of those open book, like at-home tests?
Most of mine first semester were open book.
Because you
but
were...
But not at home, actually, though.
Just was it, open was book. It COVID or no?
Well, I was on campus, but my exams were... I had a few that were open book, but in class.
Okay.
You could bring whatever, but it was still 3 or 4 hours max.
Do you like open book exams?
I'm kind of indifferent. I think it can make for a harder test, because then the professor expects you to have everything available to you, so they're going to pick the hardest version of every question.
Exactly. My favorites were always, like a bunch of my classes did the, you can have one piece of paper, and whatever you can fit on this piece of paper, you can bring into the exam with you. So, I mean, it was like the smallest writing. People had laminated pieces of paper.
Glass,
yes,
yeah.
And two-sided and all this stuff, which that was cool because I could memorize all this stuff, but just give myself, I would never write out longhand anything. It would be a million little shorthand things that would help me remember all the elements to this crime or, you know, whatever it may be, this cause of action or what you have to do if it's civil procedure. And you could use that. And that was cool. And like you said, the tests were a lot easier that weren't open book. We had a couple, and I don't remember if they were first year, so that might be why the difference, but untimed open book at home tests. And they were the most miserable.
I feel like I would hate that.
I never wanted to turn it in.
Right.
I never wanted to turn it in because I always felt like I could add more and more and more. And then we also had some that had word limits. Have you done any of those yet?
Not yet, no.
My property exam, which was the one I got a B on my first year, the only B I got my first year was a word limit. So it's like I just got done taking 5 tests that were just word vomit, like you're saying, and now I can only use 5,000 words or whatever it was. So now I have to answer all these questions. I have to think about my words carefully. That's really hard to do, too.
That doesn't even seem to accurately reflect your knowledge if you're being constrained by like how you can fit it in.
Do you want to know my opinion?
Yeah.
I just think the professor did not want to grade a bunch of 30-page essays.
He was ready to start summer vacation.
She was like, I'm not going to grade these long word vomit. You've got to figure out how to write it your first year of law school, even though you're still figuring all this out. So I hated it. That was my least favorite test. So if you have one of those, good luck. But yeah, I always hated the open book ones because I agree with you. It was much harder. But that just goes to show you, right? So in law school, it's not just like, oh, I have a test or I have an exam this week. You have no idea what's going to be on it. You have no idea how many they'll tell you sometimes how many multiple choice versus how many essays. You have to figure out because each class could be different, whether it's timed, untimed, open book, totally closed book, or bring in one piece of paper. All essay, because we had some tests that were just all essay. We didn't have any multiple choice on them either. So there's every which way, and you have to adapt and kind of deal with taking that exam in law school. So when you, I'm trying to think now, so first semester you were in person, was everybody in person or no?
It was optional. So okay. my whole section was in person because they selected it.
So when you took an exam, was everybody in the same classroom at least for one of the exams?
Yeah.
Okay. What was that like? What's the stress level like? What's it like everybody coming in there for their first law school exam?
Nobody's doing well.
Exactly. Yeah. You just see
you're walking in, people haven't slept. I mean, really the library of a few days before the first 1L law school exam, it was, you know, stress. No, everyone was struggling. So it's a lot of pressure. It's the major difference between this and undergrad is every single one of my classes, there may have been an ungraded midterm, but your grade in the whole class that you spent hundreds of hours going to class and studying for, it's determined by how you perform on one exam.
That's hilarious. I didn't even think about that as a question to ask. But yeah, like there are no other homework assignments.
Yeah.
Like you just read every day because you don't want to get embarrassed when the professor calls on you. But there's no like, oh, I can make that up with some extra credit or I've done really well on my homework. So if I get a B and I forget that classes do stuff like that. So it's literally the entirety of everything you've put hours and hours and blood, sweat and tears into comes down to literally one exam that's going to be difficult, but you know it's graded on a scale. So when you come into that, it's, you know, it is what it is, I guess. And you just have to learn how to deal with it. Did you pull any all-nighters?
I didn't because I did enough of that in undergrad to realize that that wasn't helpful.
It doesn't work.
And particularly in law school with the one exam format and just the way everything is structured, you can't pop. If you need to pull an all-nighter before an exam,
You're dead.
you just don't even show up.
Yeah. you're dead because, and that's the thing is, I had lots of friends that pulled all-nighters. And it's almost like Dude, I promise you, if you would have just gotten a good night's sleep the night before, whatever you knew from the semester would at least come out, you know, coherently.
Right.
As opposed to you're just stressed out of your mind. You're tired. You're not remembering anything. Everything's all jumbled up in your head. And it just didn't work. I pulled zero all-nighters in law school, literally. And people don't believe that. It's like, but I read everything I had to read. I just did it basically as a full-time job from like 9 to 5.
That's how I tried to do it.
Yeah. I mean, in some nights, obviously you have to do it at night or work later into the night. But if you do that, it's pretty manageable. Like if you just take it like a job and take it seriously, it's pretty manageable in my opinion. Do you feel the same way?
I agree. Yeah. Cause okay. I was able to keep it to the weekdays 9 to 5. Oh, like you said, oftentimes going way later, but I refused to do any work like Saturday night through Sunday night.
Yeah.
It's just miserable. And I could get away with it.
You've got to have some clarity and some relaxing time. Yeah. So, okay, did you, as far as it comes to exams and learning how to like deal with law schools, that's one of the hardest things for people that start law school is just dealing with the differences, different way to think, different way to grade, different way to take exams like we've talked about. Did you take advantage of meeting with professors, trying to figure out how they do their exams, what they like to see on their exams, use other resources to try to figure out the best way to kind of handle these classes?
Yeah. Definitely.
How do you feel like that helped?
I think it helps a lot. And I think if you reach out, you know, Stetson does a good job with setting you up with alumni mentors or like upperclassmen, 3L mentors, and they all have, you know, study materials, outlines to send you. And I think COVID actually, one of the positive sides is all the professor office hours switched to like Zoom meetings or Teams meetings. So it was super easy to just click a button and jump in and ask what you need to ask rather than having to drive to campus or stay on campus. So that became much more convenient and accessible. So really easy to just hop in and talk to a professor, which is absolutely something you should do.
What is some of the advice 3Ls gave you at Stetson that you really felt like helped?
Well, for the most part, they could just give insight on the professor because the professors, you know, their teaching styles differ so much. What they like to see differs. Particularly for like a written exam, the writing style they're looking for. So it was kind of helpful to just find people and they could point you in the direction of someone who had that professor and kind of give you pointers and tell you what they like to see on exams.
Yeah. And it's just like a lot of stuff, even though it's not practical, meaning you're not a practicing lawyer at all when you're in law school, a lot of stuff is translating into becoming a lawyer, right? So learning what your professor likes, learning about the professor, what they want. Is just like learning about a judge, right? Certain judges love certain things and not others. Certain judges don't mind if you're a little more aggressive and louder. Some judges hate it. Some judges like if you handle everything with the attorney outside. Don't bring any of this stuff to me. I don't want to make these little calls on whether or not you've got to produce this in discovery. Don't bring that to me or I'm going to reprimand you. Other judges expect to do it. They expect to call balls and strikes. They know it's going to be really combative and really adversarial since that's how the system is. Other judges hate it. So you've got to know what you're looking for in your law professor, and it kind of translates into being a real lawyer, knowing what your judge likes. Now, the difference is we're going to have these judges over and over and over and over again. A lot of times you only have a law professor once, but it's still a skill that is necessary in learning how the person that's going to be judging you, what they want, right? Because that's the important part. Okay. So let's talk. I've talked a lot about extracurriculars like mock trial and moot court. That's what I did. That was my experience. I loved them. They were so much fun. One thing I've talked about a little bit, but that I didn't do is law review. That's something that you're on, right? Yep. So law review is for the really smart kids in law school. Okay. So that's who Nick is. So let's talk about how you got onto law review and the different ways you can get onto law review. And then let's talk about what law review is.
Okay. So there are two ways to get on law review. You can either grade on or you can write on. And the grading on system, you basically need to be in a top whatever percentage of your class. I'm sure it varies by school. At Stetson, let's see, it was at the end of your first semester of your 1L year, if you were in the top 4% of your class, you got an invitation to join.
That's just like law school, top 4%, not 5%.
Yeah, can't round up,
make it a normal number. If you're in that 5th percent, then you just suck and you're not smart enough to be on law review. Even if you write, so writing on, you have to write an essay of some sort. And right. If it's good enough, then you get on. But don't you have to be at a certain point to even be allowed to write on? Don't you have to have certain grades?
You need to have finished either one or both. You need to have finished both of the research and writing classes and gotten a 3.25.
I think. So that's it. Yeah. Just the bottom line. I want to say at Florida State, you still had to be in the top third of the class or something even to write on. Like okay. If you were at the bottom of the class, you couldn't even write on.
I think here it's a 3.0.
Okay. So that would make sense. Yeah. You have to have some because it is really prestigious. Like if you go to the big firms, like the hoity-toity silver stocking firms, they all were on law review and whatever. So, and it's a prestigious thing that a lot of kids want to do. And even if you're in the top of the class, you write on. I never even attempted to write on because I knew it was not for me. I was not a law review kind of guy. It's awesome. If I would have graded on, I probably would have said yes. I didn't grade on automatically. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't really something that I felt like I wanted to do because everybody also said it's really time consuming. You're probably not going to be able to have enough time to do all three. And I knew I wanted to do the other two. So I've encouraged Nick to still potentially try to go after one other one, maybe mock trial if you want to or something, so you can kind of get the both. Best of both worlds, where you're actually getting some practical experience, you know, trying cases, litigating cases. But I mean, anybody's going to look at law review, even somebody like me who didn't do it, and think it's impressive, right? So it's something on the resume that catches your eyes. We did a whole video on resume building, right? Law review was one of the things on there. One of the things I noticed on his application when he applied. One of the things we talked about in his interview. One of the things that's impressive for anybody, right? You want to have the connection with the person that's interviewing you. But sometimes there's something that the person that's interviewing you didn't do, but it's still impressive. And law review is one of those. So tell us what law review actually is, what you do, what's the purpose of it?
So law review is a journal, and most law schools have a bunch of different journals you can apply to that are more, you know, specific. Like there's the environmental law journal, etc. But law review is, I guess, the most prestigious one that every law school has. And you basically, they get submissions of articles either from students themselves or from elsewhere. And they go through this kind of rigorous editing process until it finally becomes published at the end of each school year.
What I think is really cool is, like, while we're researching certain issues and cases, there are certain cases that judges have to follow, okay? So if there's, like, a Supreme Court of Florida case and the judge says this, the court in our jurisdiction has to do it, right? They have to do it. They can't, you know, stray from it. But there are also things you can use that can be persuasive to judges, right? Saying, judge, this isn't fair. I'm arguing this. There's no upper court decision that would make you do something, but here's something that I think would help convince you to rule in my favor. And you can actually use law review articles for that. So there are lots of lawyers that use law review articles from these different schools written by students that have done this research and have put together these humongous papers on like the most, just the smallest issue you could possibly have and right. submit it to a judge saying, judge, it is not fair that our client has to go through with this in this case, and here's why. And we just give the law review article. I think that's really cool, personally, that as a law student, you get to write things that are used potentially in cases. Do you guys talk about that?
I think that's really cool. I think that's, you don't have to be on law review to get published through a school's law review. You can always just submit. But that's, you know, that's the ultimate goal. That's what's cool and prestigious about it, is if you do get published, what you wrote is going to be in other law school libraries. It's going to be on legal databases.
The stuff we get excited about, right? Yeah, just now, listening, like, to you say that. And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, man, everybody probably thinks that's so nerdy.
Right. Yeah.
Like, we want to get published. It's like, so we want to write something nobody's going to read. Like mine was on such a, so I wrote, you take an upper level writing class, and my upper level writing class was on, it's called the Jimmy Rice Act. And it's basically about sexual predators and how they have X percent chance to recommit crimes if they're left out. So they should be put in like medical facilities or whatever for treatment as opposed to prison, whatever. So I had this upper level writing class. I wrote this. I ended up getting it published in the Criminal Defense Journal for Florida. Nice. And it's like so exciting. It's great. It's like literally nobody ever reads that and it doesn't matter. And it's like such a dumb, small issue, but it's something you get excited about because one of the things we really try to do and look for in law school is to get published. Like you're in law school, you're doing all this stuff, something that's good for just you and your career. You can do that while you're in law school and that's getting published, right?
Right.
So if you're in law review, your chances of getting published are like 100%. I mean, like you're basically going to get
better,
published.
Yeah.
You're basically going to get published because I mean, that's the goal and that's what they're doing. That's law review. Now let's talk about what's ahead. Okay. So what, something that you haven't experienced yet, is there something you're looking forward to or dreading that's ahead in your law school career?
So what I'm in the process of right now is, or I guess I just finished bidding for classes in the fall. So like making my picks that I'm not guaranteed to get and kind of building my schedule, because the whole first year, at least for me, your courses are picked for you. You don't need to do any of that. It's pre-selected what classes you take, what section you take them with. So now they're kind of like, you're on your own. You need to get these credits filled and figure out how you want to do it.
So yeah, and your first year, it's just like the main core courses, crim law, con law, constitutional law, contracts, property, civil procedure, torts, legal research and writing. I'm probably missing something, but it's like basically the core classes that you have to take that kind of spreads off what everybody who's not a lawyer knows as law. But now you get to do what's kind of like electives. There are still certain things you have to do,
right?
Including, like I said, the upper level writing requirement course. So how did you pick your electives? What's going into your analysis as to, I want to do this, I don't want to do that, I want to try this? How are you deciding?
So my thing is, I don't really have, let's see, what do you call it? Not a focus. What is it? A concentration.
Right.
Yeah. And some students have concentrations that have their own credit requirements, like, again, environmental law or elder law, stuff like that. I don't, because I'm not 100% nailed down what I want to practice in. So my strategy is just get them done. So like I'm picking anything that's required that I've heard is a little like manageable workload, decent professor. That's what I'm bidding for.
Yeah. And so, I mean, there's a bunch of different ways to do it, right? If you do have a concentration, you focus on that, you pick stuff that you're going to learn more about that concentration. Option number two is keep your grades up and try to pick professors that you know you'll do a good job on, which you can say, because a lot of the first year professors will have some other elective that they teach. If you did well in their class, you can take their class again, just a different subject. So that's kind of the route you're going, and knocking out requirements while you're still figuring out what you want to do,
right?
So that's important. And then the third one is to try different areas of law you might be interested in, and you can either get more interest in them in the class or cross them off the list in the class, right?
Exactly.
So that's kind of the third option of taking electives, which you still have four semesters left to do that. So just knocking out requirements obviously is a valid option at this point when you're starting to pick electives. Is there anything that you're kind of dreading going forward that you know is coming?
Not too much. My big thing that I was dreading, because I'm a much better writer than I am speaker, was just the oral advocacy competition in RW2. So some of the experiential requirements, which is a credit requirement you need where you get kind of more practical skills and you go out and practice and do oral arguments. Some of that stuff is a little bit hairy to me, but it'll be good practice when I finally get to it.
Do you have to take trial ad? Is that a required class?
You know, I have it right here. I'm not sure.
I don't know if it is or not, but
yeah,
you should take
required.
Trial ad because it's at least something that forces you to try to do something, see if you're interested in it. If you're not, then you'll know, you know, and that's something that's cool. Like at Florida State, we also had like a speech requirement where we had to take a speech class. Did you have that? Went to South Carolina. Is that where you went?
Yeah.
Where did you go? South Carolina?
USC.
Okay. So the other USC.
the first one.
So you went to South Carolina. And so big college basically is what I was saying. So it's similar to Florida State, just not as good, but did you actually have a speech requirement? Do you know?
Yeah, there was.
Okay, so you had to take that class.
It was like an argument debate class.
Exactly. Yeah, we had to take that type of class too. I think that's good. And I think lawyers should also do stuff like that. I think it's important. I think it's helpful. So I would encourage you to take oral advocacy. So let's finish with one thing. So I've kind of already mentioned the interview process, right? So we had a bunch of people interview for the internship, which we always put out every semester because we want to get as many, you know, Stetson Law students through here so they can kind of see what it's like being a lawyer, the type of lawyer that we are, right? That's our goal with internships with law clerks. We're not trying to grind them to the bone and just, you know, just document review in a dark room all day. There may be some of that, but because there's some of that in being a lawyer.
Right.
So that's what we're trying to do basically throughout the process. So Nick is doing the internship throughout this summer. Talk about what it was like. I assume being top of the class, you interviewed more than just here.
I did.
I would hope. So you interviewed other places. What was the interview process like? How did you select who you were going to interview with? How'd you select working here for this semester? Because just after your first year, you have, you know, lots of opportunities to do other things as well. How did you kind of make that decision and make that plan as far as what you were going to do throughout the process work-wise?
So I did most of my interviews through OCI, which is on-campus interviews. Most law schools have their own kind of LinkedIn where companies will come and they'll say, drop your resumes and we'll look at them and pick for interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did a few of those, and those are with just massive law firms. And as I was going through the interview process for most of them, I kind of got the idea that it was, you know, we're going to put you in a corner and make you write 50 hours a week, or they were unpaid. And I kind of, I realized and got good advice that working for a smaller firm, you get much more practical experience. You get to sit in on things. You get to, you know, actually see what lawyers do as opposed to just being in the research and writing department. And so I had a couple follow-up interviews, but I didn't heavily pursue any of the bigger firms, and saw this ad and it looked fun and I listened to the podcast.
So the big firms, did you get to actually go and visit any of the big firms or no?
It was all Zoom, even the follow-up interviews,
So my OCIs, they take you out to like you go and visit the big firms and they take you out to the filet mignon and lobster dinners and all that stuff. Oh yeah. So, and they put it on, but you know, and you'll like talk to especially the younger associates and stuff, like, you know, it's going to be miserable.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't end up picking any of them either. Yeah. I just couldn't. I knew it wasn't going to be for me. And again, it may be something you want to do in the future. Maybe something you want to try out. Who the heck knows? You know, maybe something, you know, the type of job you want to get after law school. It may be something people out there are looking forward to. I was surprised when I went to law school that there were people that didn't want to be trial lawyers. I was like, I just figured everybody wanted to be a trial lawyer, and it's not true. So that it is jobs that are right for some people, right? But instead you come here and already in the first couple of weeks, you've seen mediations and depositions. And what's the experience been like so far working here?
I mean, I love it. I feel like I've learned more.
You don't have to kiss up. You can just tell us like what you've liked, what you've not liked about specifically the work you're doing, not how awesome I am. Everybody already knows that.
I mean, as opposed to law school, I'm saying I enjoy this better because this is practical. So I feel like I've personally learned more actually writing up drafts for contracts, writing up drafts for, you know, responses. And this is what, my third week? I feel like in two and a half weeks, I've learned more than kind of the academia stuff in school.
Right.
You know?
Right. It's so abstract
in
school, like how to write, how to break down the elements of a criminal law and how you break this statute down. And then here you get to see, okay, so here are the elements of something. These three everybody agrees to. In law school, you've got to break down all three of these. Yeah. That would be
and
so obvious.
All of them.
Yeah, it's so dumb. So here it's like there's one issue. So let's just do research and contest and argue our facts to this one issue, right? And he's gotten to see how certain things can be contentious. Like we had a mediation that was a little bit, it was fun. You know, it was funny. It was a global mediation type of thing. And some stuff happened that was a surprise to us that made it kind of fun and funny to put the screws to somebody. He's seen depositions. Sometimes they can be boring. Sometimes they can be interesting. You know, every deposition is different. So that's been fun. And then he's done a lot of work on, it's not just research one issue and give me a 5-page memo, right?
Right.
Instead, we've given him our initial complaint, the response, and what everybody's saying, and then our clients kind of notes on the response and then say, okay, research this issue, but let's apply it to our facts and kind of put it all together for the thing that we're actually going to argue, right? And I think that's better for your thinking process of, yes, in law school, you're learning how to research. You're learning how to write. You're learning how to break this stuff down so that when you do have to come apply it in real life, you have a leg up and understand how to do that. Because if you ask somebody who's not in law school to do exactly what you did today, they wouldn't be able to do it. They can read and they can write, but they just can't understand how to put it all together because that's kind of the point of the abstract stuff that you're learning in law school.
Yeah.
Right? So I think that's important when people are looking for jobs. What were some of the things you were looking for? Were you just looking for practical experience? Was that like the number one thing to you?
That was the big one, to be honest.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think, you know, COVID was winding down this last summer, but I think the jobs were pretty rough where the vast majority were completely unpaid, 40 hours a week kind of research stuff.
Right.
So it was tough. You know?
And I think that you can understand why people are doing that. You can understand why firms are doing stuff like unpaid internships and why students are taking it, right? Because you're still getting the practical
application. Absolutely.
It's best to merge them together, right? I mean, in my opinion, picking the highest paid internship probably means they're going to grind you to the bone and you're going to be earning that, right? Not that that's a bad thing, you know, that's fine. But I think, you know, you should want to get paid. If you're at the top of your class, you should want to get paid for the work that you're doing. But you also realize that this money is going to be insignificant to hopefully what you make one day if you get that practical experience, if you get the resume builders, and if you go get the job and do the work that you want to in the end. And I think that's a smart way to kind of pick a job is you're at the top of your class, you're doing well academically, you're learning academically, but now you want to marry it together practically and get some of that practical application.
Exactly. Yeah.
Cool. All right, Nick, thanks for being on. Maybe we'll do another one while you're here this summer. Hopefully everybody enjoyed it. We'll be back with you next time.
Hi, I'm Peter Tragos, host of the Lawyer You Know podcast and YouTube channel. The saying goes, everyone hates lawyers until you need one. Well, I'm here when you need one to answer your questions and give you insight that you didn't know you needed.
You have been listening to The Lawyer You Know with Clearwater attorney Peter Tragos. The experienced lawyers at Tragos, Sartis & Tragos in Clearwater discuss common legal questions, providing some insights into the legal process, and cover current events as they relate to the legal field. Listen each Tuesday for The Lawyer You Know with Peter Tragos, or download The Lawyer You Know wherever you hear your podcasts.